U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Will Friday's jobs numbers help Congress get to an agreement on a COVID relief bill? And what else is on the legislative agenda for this lame duck session? Welcome, I'm Kyle Peterson with the Wall Street Journal, sitting in today for Paul Jugot. We're joined today by my colleagues, Kim Strassel. Hi, Kim.
Hi, Kyle. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. And Bill McGurn. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Kyle.
Let's start with the November jobs numbers out from the Labor Department on Friday, which said that the U.S. added 245,000 net jobs last month. That's compared with about 600,000 jobs in the month of October. And the gains in November came in, one of them was in transportation and warehousing, according to the Journal's news story on this, probably reflecting some holiday hiring. Government employment dropped by about 100,000 as census workers ended their counting. But we're still about 10 million jobs short of where employment was before the pandemic. And the growth curve seems to be flattening a bit here. So, Bill, what's your read of these data? And is there concern that the V-shaped recovery is stalling out?
I think there are real concerns now, but I'm not sure our priorities are where they ought to be. A lot of people are attributing the problems ahead to the lack of a COVID-19 relief bill. And I think there's a lot of stuff that a good relief bill, one that concentrated on, say, paycheck protection and so forth, could do. But I do think that a lot of the worry is that we have a lot more talk of shutdowns. California is putting in a lot more restrictions. I know in New Jersey, where I am, we're talking about closing restaurants down. So if I were a business owner, I'd be very worried about what's coming up. Vice President Biden has said that we're going to have a dark winter ahead. So I think there's a lot of question marks now on what our political class is going to do. And I think that has a lot more effect on chilling growth than the lack of another bill, as helpful as some aspects of a bill may be.
It's a good point about the cause and effect here. I mean, as virus cases go up, states and cities have tightened their COVID restrictions, including limits on indoor dining, on restaurants. And so it's reasonable that you'd think that they'd have a pretty direct effect on restaurants doing less business and having less employment.
Oh, absolutely. And not just restaurants. I mean, think about the entire travel sector. Hotels, airplanes, train travel, Airbnb, people using gig workers, Uber, Lyft. They're getting some of their business back by delivering food, etc. But there are entire swaths of the economy. I mean, anything that has to do with entertainment, sporting events or movie theaters or, indoor kid play centers. You've got these restrictions. These are all businesses that continue to suffer. So the reality is, I mean, the U.S. economy has recovered a lot of the ground that was lost earlier this year. And we're still seeing some very good signs. Consumers boosted their spending in October. That was for that sixth straight month that has gone up. Unemployment benefits, applications for them, they fell last week after a certain jump. We've talked before about the Atlanta Federal Reserve. They have a GDP Now number where they kind of, it's not really a forecast, but they say based on the data, where are we going to come in at the fourth quarter? They're still predicting an 11% growth in GDP. Now that's just for the first half. We'll see if those numbers continue to worsen, but we're still likely to end up with a pretty healthy GDP report. What we're seeing right now are these growing virus restrictions. That certainly is a little worrisome, but we've also got some great news in that, likely this week we may get an FDA authorization for that first Pfizer vaccine. It's going to start rolling out. So I think that this is more a kind of wait and see moment in terms of how it affects the economy.
But the context of this is these long running negotiations over another phase, depending on how you count. I think this was phase 5 of COVID relief. And Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, for example, has called for another targeted bill. And some of the legislative proposals that have been talked about, Bill, include some of that small business money or paycheck protection program money. And Democrats have tried to hold out for a broader, bigger bill with money for states and cities in it, for example. But do you think that these jobs numbers, the economic news, may help these two sides come to an agreement?
They may, but again, I'm not sure that that really is the solution. Look, there's always a need in Washington to look as if you're doing something and to do legislation and to spend money, whether or not it actually has the effect that it's supposed to have. You pointed to the sticking point. I don't think Senator McConnell and the Republicans are opposed to relief such as expanding the paycheck protection, you know, that goes to workers and so forth, or business liability for businesses struggling with this. But the Democrats keep insisting on provisions that would bail out city and states, you know, and I think the Republicans have the right idea. If we're going to help people, help people. Don't help politicians and places that have not lived within their means. So, my view is that if they do come to an agreement, it might have some marginal effect, but I worry about the broader direction where we have people talking about much more drastic shutdowns. I mean, the way to revive the economy is to let the economy grow, let people do things. And we seem to be moving in the opposite direction. I also think that this insistence that the Democrats have been putting in their bills of aid for, you know, states and cities, that's not going away. That's going to be one of Joe Biden's big tests. A lot of states like Illinois, who said it explicitly, and California, they're hoping a Biden administration means bailing them out because they're in a bad way because of their own spending decisions. And I think that's dangerous and doesn't really have much to do with COVID.
Well, to talk about a specific legislative proposal, earlier this week, a bipartisan group of lawmakers introduced a package that's about $900 billion. After that, the Democratic leaders, a joint statement from Pelosi, Nancy Pelosi, Speaker, and Minority Leader Chuck Schumer sort of embraced that. Here's what they said. They said, in the spirit of compromise, we believe the bipartisan framework introduced by senators yesterday should be used as the basis for immediate bipartisan bicameral negotiations. They said that they would offer improvements, but that this is a place to start. And that is a climb down from you know, the $3 trillion bill that Speaker Pelosi was talking about some months ago. But Kim, here's some of the things that are in that $900 billion package. There's about $300 in weekly unemployment supplement. There's money for small businesses, but then there's also $160 billion for state and local governments.
Yeah, I would call it a temporary climb down because the two key words you just put out there from that statement were that they have adopted this as a basis for further negotiation, meaning it's their low point and they intend for it to be much bigger, and that they are going to offer improvements, which I would probably count in terms of hundreds of billions of them, dollar wise. Look, I think the problem sometimes with bipartisan bills, and it always sounds nice, right? Lawmakers getting together. But in particular, when you are talking about spending bills, those are kind of the easiest places to get a bipartisanship because everybody just gets everything that they want. And that's what you see in this bill. And I think it's a problem. It's why it's a non-starter in some ways for many Republicans. Because as Bill was mentioning earlier, I think what we have right now is a need to address some very specific sectors of the economy that continue to be most hurt by these rolling lockdowns. This bill instead not just throws money at everything, but revives some very bad ideas. You know, one of them you just mentioned was enhanced unemployment insurance. We know that when you are handing people dollars in addition to their state unemployment that they are getting, it is a discouragement for them to go back to work because many people end up making more than they would if they were on the job. And we knew that when you look back at our at statistics, the point at which we really started to explode in terms of whittling down those unemployment assistance claims and people getting back on the job was at the end of the summer when that enhanced unemployment provision expired. So, you know, the poor ideas, a lot of money thrown at everyone, including at states that are basically getting rewarded for bad policy, you know, and that term means not just their policy, bad policies, long-term ones like Illinois' underfunded pension system that they could use this money to shore up, but real-time bad policy. Like, why should anybody be giving money right now to Los Angeles County, which just banned outdoor dining, despite the fact that there's zero evidence that outdoor dining leads to the spread of COVID. So, you know, the lockdowns are the problem, the lockdowns. And so I think that there's a lot of pushback right now, especially among Republicans, for any bill that's going to encourage bad behavior, encourage things that are detrimental to the economy, rather than focusing attention on those specific groups that most need it.
Hang tight. We'll be right back. You're listening to Potomac Watch from the Wall Street Journal.
U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. The negotiations on the COVID relief legislation, however, are not the only thing that are on the agenda. And in fact, it looks like it could be a pretty busy lame duck session, not least because government funding runs out on December 11th. And nobody seems to want to do a government shutdown going into Christmas. But one question, it seems to me, is whether Congress is going to do some short-term funding, maybe kicking this into 2021, into March perhaps, or whether they're going to sit down and hash out a longer-term funding agreement. And Bill, do you think it matters from the perspective of the change in White House occupancy? Is it better for the GOP to get a longer deal now while Trump is in office than to kick this can and to fight it out under President Biden?
That's a good question. I'm personally skeptical of deals. So my inclination is to not just agree early on. I think we're going to have a lot of lines drawn. I don't think the Democrats have really given any indication that they're willing to really play ball in any way. And I suspect that won't happen until President Trump leaves Washington, and then they will have less incentive to do it. So I don't know. It's an interesting question. I keep going back to that. I'm not primarily interested in deals in this. I'm primarily interested in changing our approach from trying to, keep everyone inside and so forth to managing risk and opening up as much as we can. You know, I look at, you know, we just assume that all these other things done in the name of health, shutdowns and stuff, work. But then again, I look at Florida, where it's a lot more open than New York, and New York has, you know, higher case rates, higher death rates, and I think higher hospitalization rates right now than Florida. So I'm just not sure what we're making our decisions on, and I'm just skeptical that such deals are really going to fix things.
Well, I mean, in the absence of a deal on government funding, the government shuts down, which is not, I don't think would reflect well on anybody. Though, I mean, I think there is, what I'm trying to ask about is the leverage here. And it's particularly interesting because of these two Georgia Senate runoffs that we're having in January, which will decide control of the Senate. And so, I mean, is it that whether to do a short-term deal and leave the longer thing for March, is it a bet on who controls the Senate?
That is certainly a calculation that is going around. Look, we need to separate the things out here, right? We have a question of keeping government open, which you can do through a continuing resolution or you can do through an omnibus. Right now, all of my sources are telling me that the likelihood that there will be a blowout omnibus at the end of the year is highly likely. Again, because one of the few things that politicians in Washington can usually agree on on is more spending. And, you know, there may be some small things that I mean, sometimes we've had situations in the back where there are big issues that get in the way, and like the shutdown that we had over the president's wall funding. But my understanding, having spoken to congressional members, is that appropriators now have their top line numbers and they are working out the details, and that's what we're likely to have. That's a separate question from whether or not, you know, we get a COVID relief bill, or whether is it attached to such an omnibus or to a continuing resolution. Look, I think it's traditional for people to do these year-end bills and to sometimes just kick the can to the next president when you have a change in administration. I think that everyone right now, Chuck Schumer and Mitch McConnell, are trying to make that judgment about which would help them more, short term or long term. But it's not unclear because of this COVID X factor out there, and just how much I think Republicans would like to get this bill done now so that they can say it's over and kind of make it less likely that Joe Biden can come in and ask for another great big thing. And I think that there's an incentive for Democrats to try to push it off because they are hoping for control and they would like to be in charge. But at the same time, there's a lot of pressure on all politicians to get this done now from their constituents.
Also in the mix for Congress is the National Defense Authorization Act, including funding for the military and a pay raise for troops. And there, an interesting issue is that President Trump is threatening to veto that legislation unless it also repeals Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act. This is the provision of federal law that says if I libel somebody in a tweet, the person who's libeled can sue me, but can't sue Twitter for what I've said on Twitter. And here's what President Trump tweeted on Tuesday. He said, if the very dangerous and unfair Section 230 is not completely terminated as part of the National Defense Authorization Act, I will be forced to unequivocally veto the bill when sent to the very beautiful Resolute Desk, unquote. Bill, what do you make of this position, this controversy?
Well, first, he's absolutely right about the Resolute Desk. I used to sit across it quite often in my years there. But I don't think the NDAA is the place to have this fight. You know, a few months ago, I would have said that this is just kind of ridiculous. It's never going to happen on 230 with the NDAA. But one of the odd things about 230, this issue, whether what you were saying is the places like Facebook and Twitter are not publishers. You know, if the Wall Street Journal runs something by a writer that libels someone, the writer is liable, but so is the publication, and they're not. I think this has led to some very bad things, but the danger now is that there are a lot on the right who don't like the obvious bias coming from big tech, and they want to use 230 to go after them, to make them liable. And meantime, there are a lot on the left that don't like big tech just because it's big and it's successful. So I generally don't like mix it, you know, even apart from the substance. I don't think that the defense bill, you know, defense spending is a place to make these kind of fights. I think it should be considered directly, and let's work it out. So I think this has a potential to cause a real problem.
And to that point, I mean, it seems like there is appetite on both sides of the aisle in Washington to do something about Section 230. But if you consider it directly in its own bill, there's opportunity to have a debate and do something with a little bit more nuance than simply repealing it, Kim, which it seems like there's not appetite in Washington to do.
Yeah, I mean, and that's just one of the reasons that I do hope President Trump backs down on this, because one is, as I totally agree with Bill, this is not the place to be putting this. And the military question authorization bill is simply too important to play politics with an unrelated provision for. So that's one reason. Two, I mean, now, of course, we have to understand, why does Donald Trump want to do it? Because he does want to put his imprint on this. This is going to be probably one of the hottest topics next year. And I think the president wishes that he could have more control over its outcome than he's going, you know, than he'll have as an outgoing president. The better place is to do it next year, and to have both Republicans and Democrats debate some of these proposals. Look, this is a very tricky subject. And I don't know that either side has really, including Republicans, have lit upon a good answer for how to solve this. But the idea of full repeal is a very blunt supposed solution and potentially not a solution at all. And so this is, if there's anything out there that deserves some real debate, it's this one, not just repeal via an authorization bill.
And then if that weren't enough, also pending in the Senate are still some of President Trump's nominees, including Judy Shelton's nomination to the Federal Reserve Board of Governors. And Bill, that's a nomination that's been held up a little bit, and a few Republican senators have announced that they oppose her appointment there. What's the story there?
Well, I think we had an excellent editorial on that, and we mentioned Lamar Alexander, a very respectable senator who's retiring, and he said he won't vote for her because she threatens Fed independence. And I think that's because she had, they simplify it to say that she didn't want low interest rates during the Obama years, but advocated for them during the Trump years. It's a lot more complicated than that. I think the bigger story is that if she is not voted on, if she's not agreed to, no doubt whoever Joe Biden nominates to take her place is going to be a lot more accommodating and a lot less independent. And Judy Shelton is a serious thinker on this with a long history. She is not a wallflower, and she is not likely to go along. And I think on the Fed, she would ask some really important questions. So I don't understand this, because I think the only thing that happens if she is not approved is that we get someone far worse.
I mean, I think that's a reasonable point, that when you're considering a nominee like this, the real question is not yes or no. It's compared to what? I mean, what's the alternative? And in this case, Kim, it seems that the alternative would be to kick this opening over to President Biden to fill.
Well, I mean, look, I think one of the arguments that we made in that editorial, which was very correct, is that Republicans should move on this because, if you're worried about Fed independence, then you should be very concerned about a potential Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen working with a potential Fed chief, Lil Brainard, to just implement Joe Biden's policy in a way that really does undermine Fed independence. Having Judy Shelton there on the board is an opportunity to provide a bit of a counterbalance. My view is, if there's an opening for this confirmation to be done, Republicans need to do it. And that's an argument that I think, back when Lamar Alexander announced his opposition, it was a very different dynamic. But the situation has changed, and if it is independence he cares about, it would be worthwhile his getting on board with this, and they're filling it as soon as they could.
All right, thank you, Kim and Bill. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back next week with another edition of Potomac Watch.
U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at alibabapowersbusinesses.com.